I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Berlin. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Achtung 424 Extra. And it's extra because we've got our regular special guest, Mr. Harry Warren. How are you doing, H?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. How are you?
We're just speaking off air, weren't we? I'm finding this a strange season. And I think I might have made this point already to Mike on the regular show, which will be yesterday by the time this goes out. It's a very odd season. I'm finding Gary Rowett this season a fairly odd manager, if I'm going to be honest. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, because I really don't want to jump on the easy bandwagon. And you know, you were at the ground last night, Harry, after what in the end was a good 1-0 win. But the team left the field at half time, and I felt justifiably to jeers and to boos and the rest, because we all hear the same comments that get made. There were people around me in blocks 1 and 2. That were, you know, expressing strong opinions, let's put it that way, about Gary Rowett. And I thought it might be interesting. Obviously, we'll talk about the game last night because it was a good game in the end. And I think you have to take your hat off where it's due. And the other side of that coin is you criticise where it's appropriate. And I just wanted to try and touch on where we're at with Gary Rowett. And I don't know if we can get inside his head, because I can't quite understand some of his thinking at times. And I think... don't know about you, Harry, but that slightly bothers me, because you know, last night's game was everything encapsulated in one match, wasn't it? You know, we had a second half Stoke style comeback after a really drab and really dreary first half, and you can't have the sunshine without a little rain at times. I know, but the contrast is really quite marked. Last couple of home games now. How did you see last night?
I thought the first half was akin to under Holloway. It was a system being played to fit everyone in, yet fitting no one in. Yeah. Benik Afobe has never been a left winger. Matt Smith can't press. They're playing five at the back and playing out from the back with a keeper that decided to turn up, and his key attribute seemingly being that he was very, very good with his feet. And there was times where sort of in their own sort of final third, there was five Reading players knocking it about, and we've got Matt Smith sort of standing off in a sort of press, half press, shall we say. This is not the way to get the den lit up on a cold Tuesday night at the beginning of November. This definitely was not a firework night kind of thing. And I just sat there, and I mean the crowd, I don't know what it looked like from where you were, but it felt very empty. It felt very League One Millwall, which I like, funny enough. I like the fact that, I mean, there was a hell of a lot of tourists at Millwall last night. I don't know what kind of deals.
We didn't get them. I mean, where I was sat, I quite like it from a podcasting point of view, because you can talk and no one's going to look at you like you're a nutcase, because there was row upon row upon row of empty seats over in where I sit in Birdshit Corner. I didn't see so many of the tourists. It looked like regulars there, but there weren't many of them, and a lot of regular faces actually weren't there.
Yeah, that's what I had. The regulars seemed to have been swapped out for people wearing Millwall scarves, holding them up in front of, you know, sort of the pitch that, at eye level kind of thing. And I'm almost like, why have you come here? There must be a better show in town, whether it be football, whether it be a show. There must be something that you could be doing better than this.
You'd hope the West End can put something on. I mean, you'll always get the Danish and the Dutch and the other nations looking for their seat number in an empty block. And sometimes I'll say to them, "Don't matter where you sit, mate. There's no allocation of seat numbers."
Sometimes I feel like they're like lemmings. So I feel like it's like doing a human experiment to watch them struggle for their seat. Does that make me an evil person? I don't know.
I don't know. I do feel for them when they bring their beers in, like civilized people do it all around the world when they go to football. They bring a beer in to sit and watch the football, and then they get chucked back downstairs or relieved of their points by Lurch or something.
By Lurch or Lurch's cronies. Yeah. There was a bit of that last night. Funny enough, the kiosk last night, I was reliably informed in the Dockers Lower, you could get a pie from the kiosk as you come in, but you couldn't get a pie from the kiosk down the end. So you could get one or the other. So you could get a pie one end and a burger down the other, not at the same kiosk.
I think the club are struggling for staff, Harry. I mean, you know, it's a serious thing in a way. I don't think they can get the people to do the to run it properly, and that's why you get these silly situations that you're describing. That's what I think.
I can't see them making the under six. That long gone are the days where the youth team players have to as part of their duties do a shift behind the Millwall kiosk.
But, it was funny. I was driving over last night. It didn't take me long to get through the tunnel last night. So I started to listen to the Neil Harris podcast, The Wall Talk, which is very good. And I recommend anyone have a listen to it. And, you know, I'm only 20 minutes in, but the evident love of Millwall just pours out of the man. And it was quite an interesting thing to kind of arrive to. Neil sounds like exactly as I hoped he would sound like, just as a fan watching him as a player. He comes over as a person with a deep and abiding love of Millwall Football Club in all of its facets. And sometimes that's not always attractive. Whereas last night's, certainly the opening phase, and, you know, Gary Rowett is never going to be Neil Harris. He doesn't come from the same kind of a starting point as a player, or, you know, he's not embedded in the club folklore. But it just looked a bit like on Saturday, the away game at Huddersfield, it felt like no one cared very much. And you can talk about Neil's tactics till the cows come home, and maybe they reach their limits, and maybe I think the bit I turned off the car engine was where he was talking about his own managerial development, and I think he'd probably be the first to say he's got things to pick up, and he probably never stopped learning in that profession. But the soul-destroying thing is at Millwall, where no one seems to be too bothered, and the game last night seemed to be going down that road at times. I mean, there was an early chance for Jed. Then it all went off the boil. And then towards the end of the half, I don't know if you recall this, but it's like the defence suddenly turned into five or six strangers that had just met at the bus stop and just walked in with Millwall shirts on. And so we're now the defence, you know.
Well, we don't seem to have any kind of pattern of play in that first half. There was no, right, we're going to, you know, they did seem like they were 11 strangers put together on my Saturday league side, you know, out of a pool of 70 players, we picked 10 aside, and this is the first time we're all playing together. And that happens at Millwall too much this season, especially in transition from attack to defence, and more so in when we've lost the ball in our own half. It's always dangerous, but this season we get punished every time we do it or it seems to. Mm. But again, touching on your point, the thing is that with Gary Rowett, his win ratio in the last couple of weeks has been very good. What is it, 5 out of 6?
It's improved a lot because it wasn't so good about a month ago. But
you know how, like, you can be teams at the top of the table and people turn around and go, they won't last because they're not as good as they're, you know, that's hiding a lot of cracks.
Yeah.
That is what this is doing. And you know, it's people are going to slate me. I don't care, right? He's not a very good football manager. Last night, he done things that meant they won a game. But how many times has he done that since Callum Davidson has left? It's dropped off remarkably since that man has gone. For whatever reason, it may be a pure coincidence. But at the same time, this must be the same for every single club in this bunch of teams that we are league position wise, because I've come to the conclusion that this championship season, barring the teams that are going to go up automatically and probably Fulham, is dog shit. Because
it's wide open, which I think is the same point in a way. It's this much of a muchness across the board. The thing that intrigued me last night, I just want to dwell on last night for a moment, if I may, is that I was looking at Reading because they were coming towards where I was sitting in the second half. First half, sorry. And I presume we watch teams. I presume we do. I mean, you can do a lot of work just watching the TV. There's a lot of information available on how teams play and their style. And Reading were a possession-based side, and you know, I didn't think they were particularly threatening, but they certainly kept the ball a lot and they denied it to us. So you kind of want something to match up with that. And I thought we looked so woefully ill-suited to the team that we were playing in the first half, particularly. Mm. I wonder what we've been looking at all week. What you know, I'm not saying that I would do any better. And I'm not setting myself up as any,
opposition scout.
Yeah, like I know better. But, you know, if you watch your opponents and you get a general sense of how they play, who their danger men are and what they're going to do, and you want to react to that or match it, then we just look so far off of the pace in the first half, listeners, I stress. Because the second half, it was totally different. It was electric, suddenly.
That's very much like the Fulham game.
Yeah.
He made tactical changes for the Fulham game at home when we got pumped and they were out of sight inside 22 minutes. And he changed to match them up. And it wasn't a game to match up Fulham's tactical ability because they're better than us. We are not doing anything. And in the first half, I agree with you, we're totally passive. We're passive against their...
Sat behind the ball, and watching them pass.
And the thing that allows you... This is the thing. Is by playing a four against their five, it allowed their wing-backs to come out. And their wing-backs come out, and your left-back and right-back get pushed further and further back. So you don't go and press, because you can't press, because they've now got a two-on-one. And this is what happens. This is why when you change to five, although it was defensive, or on the face of it is defensive at halftime, it's not defensive because basically what you've done is our fullbacks now are going at their fullback, so therefore they can't make as much of passing
in a sense. Yeah,
exactly. So you've cut that option, so you're sending it back through the middle of the park, And that's basically where the changes really started to begin. Also, the fact that Scott Malone, after Jed, for me, is probably in that system, is our most important player. That's not knocking Murray Wallace, but Murray Wallace is sort of a meat and two veg Millwall, great Millwall story type football player. But Scott Malone is Scott Malone. He can't defend, but he can do lots of stuff. Lovely little things when he goes forward, and he's a modern fullback. They don't defend, they attack. And these are important points. Going back to what you were saying about Gary Rowett, what does he do? I generally still don't think he knows his best team. I don't think he knows. He's got a lot of midfielders, which still baffles me. Kifton Bell went off at half-time because he was lucky not to get sent off, I think, because he could have been booked before he did.
I think he was getting frustrated with his inability to make an impact on the game. So his way then is to clip somebody, but it's a short-sighted.
But again, all of a sudden we go to a sort of more, I don't know, I like the idea of a Leonard Saville Billy Mitchell midfield is my ideal three, and I got tantalisingly close to it last night, and I had it for a few moments against Stoke, and it was as a midfield two with Leonard and Billy Mitchell. And Billy Mitchell, you know, needs to learn on the job. There was a moment last night where he turned into Travel, and I thought, this is going to end badly, and he somehow got away with it. He made that great tackle at the end, and I want to see him, but I also, on the same point, want to see Danny McNamara. And I have a thing with our manager that he doesn't like young players. It just looks very obvious to me that it's not a
I don't understand. I mean, I know the Championship is a tough proving ground, and it's no place for boys. That's, you know, we're not listening to Neil speaking on the podcast. He's talking about the great team of 1998, 1999, 2000 promotion from League One, as it would be now, where you could play youngsters. We had to play youngsters because we had no other choice, and they had to learn on the job because there was no one else adequate to do the job that we were asking of them. But we are in a higher level, and I can kind of accept that you know, you'll win nothing with kids, as the old saying goes. But equally, we do have talent. I believe Danny Mack, for example, is a talented boy. He will make errors because he's a young man, and young men do often stray where they shouldn't. You know, that's the story of us all. But equally, you sort this kind of thing out on the training ground, age, don't you? You know, you hopefully weekdays you condition your players to do the roles that you're asking of them, and then match day, well, you know, you keep your fingers crossed they go out and do it. But I don't understand why Danny Mack has not even been sat on the bench when, you know, I don't want to keep digging Alex Pearce out, because I don't have a problem with him particularly, but he will not play much of a role this season, whereas Danny Mack you'd expect would be a major part of the drama, you know.
And I expect if we lost a centre midfielder, like, the best thing that could happen to us is Evans and Kifton Bell getting injured. That would be the best thing that would happen, because that would force him into playing, you know, midfielders in midfielders positions, you know, beyond this. He loves a utility player. He does love a player that can play multiple positions.
He does. And I mean, this is a Football Manager thing. I don't think he's alone in that. Across the years, the managers always seem to favour workmanlike, you know, functionality over talent. I mean, you could take it to any level you like, and the talented player will always lose out to the Glenn Hoddle will always lose out to the, I'm trying to think of a functional midfielder of that era, I don't know, Jerry Francis or something, you know.
Yeah, that's different. I think that's based from back then, when you sort of only had one or two subs. So you needed someone that could play maybe, you know, left back, right back, centre midfield, you know. That makes sense. But they're talking now about bringing the five sub rule in permanently.
Next season, I believe. Yeah.
So this idea of a utility man, I do not need a George Evans, a Kifton Bell, and an Alex Pearce to be free of my Millwall options.
There's a lot of functionality going on.
It's a lot of dysfunctionality there, I'll tell you. I mean, they're limited players in their way. But this is the thing with Gary Rowett. I don't see. I'm not sold on the vision. That's the thing.
I mean, the
I can accept. You can accept a lot of things for winning, and we're winning games, so we shouldn't be too thing. But like every time I think I see what he's trying to do, instantaneously he stops himself from doing that, and he moves on to something else. He's very. I feel like he must be like
self-destructive pattern of behaviour, isn't it? It's like the psychologist couch here, you know.
It's like an addict. He's like an
addict. He does have a solution, because he's had it twice now, forced upon him. Like often, tough love is often forced upon you for your own good. Against Stoke, he had to come out fighting because they got roundly booed off the pitch. Again,
deservedly so.
Well, exactly, deservedly so. I know the decision making of the crowd can sometimes be a harsh thing, but. You know, you only get booed off at Millwall if you've not done the business and you haven't shown that you cared enough about it either, which I think is the crucial thing. So they got booed off against Stoke, and we came out fighting, and look what happened. The place came alive, and suddenly you've got the buzz, the Millwall electricity. Yeah,
but then I read the report and he didn't like that.
We called it chaos. We thrived in the chaos. I guess he wants to control
editors. No, yes, we do thrive in chaos. This is a club built on chaos. You have to embrace the chaos. That's if you haven't worked that out by now, you're never going to get us. Yeah, this is the point about he's not a Millwall man, and he never will be, and he won't understand what that is, because if you can't understand that you have to. I don't mind you being fucking Inspector Clouseau or Hercule Poirot away from home. I don't care. Crack on with Hastings, do what you want to do, right? Be methodical, do your method, right? Yeah. But at home, I want Keith Moon. I want fucking drums and you know, I want.
That's a good analogy. I like that one. That's a good one.
But that's the yin and yang of Millwall. Like, people that go away from home are quite happy to watch Millwall fuck everyone off by being shit for 87 minutes.
And as long as you bring home the result. Yeah, that's right.
Right? I mean, that's it, right? But at home, you have to, we are here to be entertained. This is the Colosseum. This is Rome. This is, this is what we want. And, you know, there is a line, and obviously I'm doing this for dramatic effects, and I understand they won last night. I am aware of this. But the crowd, I keep saying to you, I keep saying to everyone on this podcast, it's unsustainable. That the hatred towards him in the ground is unbelievable for a man that keeps winning games. That's the thing I can't work out for.
There will be some of it. Anyone that listens to the other show where I do my recording, I mean, you'll hear stuff. I edited some of it out. So, blimey, that was a bit strong. That on bloke shouted out, you know. So you know, you're right. I mean, there is no love, and I think that's always a hard starting point. I mean, he does need results. He got it last night because we switched. And I'm not going to talk about tactics, 4-4-3, 3-5-2, whatever you like. Basically, in the second half, whatever style of play that was, wing-backs or whatever you want, there was electricity in the air. And players, I mean, Mason Bennett, I thought, actually got a little nice little underrated role in last night. He did very well. Scott Malone, you've mentioned. And you've always got Jed, who will always give you quality. And Ryan Leonard, playing out of position, was actually looking like a right-sided midfielder. He took his man on, beat him for a cross. And I thought, well, that's not his natural game. You know, he's a central midfield player. So,
and there's more chances than just the goal as well.
Yeah, there were. You know, and some slightly self-indulgent work by, I'm going to pick out Jed. I don't mean to dig him out. He could have, you know, he had a phobia loose on the inside.
I don't think a phobia done himself any favours, because I think what Jeb wanted the phobia to do was sort of hold his run and make him have a lovely little side foot square pass just across to his left. That never really happened. They should have crossed over or whatever. But I think they were so surprised to have won the ball where they were. This is very un-Millwall. Bearing down two strikers running at a defender.
We've all got out of practice with it, Harry, haven't we? I mean, the den came alive again, and that was why we won it, because the crowd responded to tougher tackling, more energy being shown. Mason Bennett was putting himself around and looking like he wanted it, and you will get a response from the crowd. I mean, you're right, it was a sparse crowd last night, but you wouldn't have known that. You listen to the recording, it sounds pretty loud, and that's Millwall. So I think the win was slightly forced upon him, and I think this is the thing that's bothering me. And I don't know whether I'm being over expectation syndrome. You know, whether we're expecting.
I like this. I like this. This running theme that I see a lot of people sort of flicking out there, like they're baiting some kind of carp. Carp bait when they're fishing. that somehow Millwall fans are expecting too much. This is what I was promised when this guy was brought in. I was brought in
to challenge for the top six.
Well, that was the 5-year plan. That was we were supposed to be. We've done the establishing ourselves in the Championship. Now we shouldn't be looking. You know, we've got arguably the best right winger in the Championship. Arguably, whether or not you rate him, that's another question. But statistically, 100%, one of the best right wingers in the Championship. We are probably a striker light of being a very, very, very good side.
Yep.
We have Tom Bradshaw, who scores two goals the other week and then doesn't get a look in at the den. Low crosses, right? And this is the thing. We scored from another low cross last night. I don't think that's a thing. But how many times do we normally hit low crosses?
Normally, our crossing is poor because it hits the first defender and goes, how many times have you seen that this season, Harry?
It's been ridiculous. But these are all kind of points. He has become a sort of semi-lucky manager. And luck has to turn or run out at some point. So this is what my concern is. The Sheffield United win, let's take that for instance. It takes a last-minute goal from your left back, your left centre-back, who's having not a particularly great season, because Jake Cooper again last night was kind of, when he's good, he's very, very good. And when he's bad, he's awful. And he scores that goal. they played against 9 men for what, 10 men rather, for what, 40 minutes, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Against Sheffield United, and you win a game, and everyone goes, what a result. It's a good result on paper.
Bottom
you
actually line, dive it's a good into result.
The actual the performance, and that's the problem. The results are fine. It's the performances that are a problem. Now, some people turn around and say, I don't give a fuck what our performances are like as long as we're winning games. That's fine as well. But the performances are paper. Well, the results are papering over the performances in terms of papering over the cracks. And I am very worried that Mr. Wallace won't be there in January. And when that happens, this lovely looking table as we look at it, what are we, eighth before the game?
Eighth, tonight? I'm just looking at it as you're speaking. With goal difference out of away from Luton in sixth spot. Above them, Huddersfield.
What's the top six? Who's third?
Top six. You've got Bournemouth top of the table, 37 points. Second, Fulham, 32. Then there's a 4-point gap to West Brom in third. And then after that, you've got much of a muchness clubs, without being disrespectful, to Coventry in fourth, Huddersfield in fifth, and then Luton, Blackpool, Millwall on 24 and six, seven, eight.
If you're the Premier League and you look at that top eight, you are generally sitting there going, don't fancy any of them, really. You know, they're not the glamorous names. They're not the most glamorous name.
West Brom would be the only as near to glamour, or maybe Fulham to some level, but not really. Yeah.
I can't imagine Millwall and Blackpool were higher on the list of desirability. I can imagine Newcastle's new owners really bought Newcastle with the ideas of trips to fucking Blackpool and Millwall. Yeah. That's really interesting, Nick. So that, I mean, this is the point as well. He's like, is it because, see, with me, it's like, I don't want to believe in this because I've been hurt before. So I don't want to believe that we're actually any good. But the question is I don't think we are good. This is I've seen us have better teams and get nowhere. Like, do you understand? Or play a more.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like whether this is a better, maybe this is a team and we've not got many individuals. Do you understand what I mean? Like, it's
I think we've got a lot of good individuals by Mill standards. I mean, whether that's as good enough to sustain a challenge over a 46 game program, maybe not. We'll see. My fear. I was sitting there last night at the end of that drab first half, and the mind wanders as it does, listeners, as you know. And I was thinking, actually, this feels a bit like certain relationships I've known, where the only way you communicate is by shouting at each other. You don't actually talk to each other. You don't have any kind of meaningful conversations. The only way you communicate is by screaming blue murder at each other. And then maybe whatever you're doing or she's doing changes, or you carry on doing it even more. And as people were shouting abuse at Gary Rowett last night, and he got quite fruity in two block one and block three, I dare say. I thought, this is getting like this. I won't name the poor
poor woman involved.
Can't defend herself and would shout back about my bad ways, you know. But you kind of finish up screaming at each other. That's how you talk to each other. That's all you got. You've only got rows, you know. You don't have normal rows. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Rach.
Yeah, I kind of understand what you're. It's like when you're saying yes to avoid a row, even though you know it's going to put you in a mood, in which case you will have a row anyway because you'll say you're fucking miserable, right?
And interspersed with the rows, you've got the little highs when you actually win one, and you've got the buzz when you're walking out the den. You know, you've actually had a good night. You know.
Well, that's what this is what this is becoming. This is becoming like Saturday. Like, Saturday is this. So, old Millwall, pre-Rowett Millwall, pre-chaos, as Rowett would put it, you'd look forward to Saturday thinking, well, Millwall going to go and have a go at Derby, and Rooney's there as a panto villain.
That's right. Absolutely.
And all that.
Widow Twanky on the sideline there, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. All these kind of things, and maybe throwing a ball in his face or something when you're giving it back for a throw in or so. These are all things that have happened, right?
Yeah, this is what goes on. This is how it works.
Yeah, exactly, right? But I can't see that. I just couldn't. I can see it being a boring 1-0 defeat. Or a boring 1-0 win. And if you get the 1-0 win, you know, with results going your way, we'll be sitting like fifth or fourth. And you'll be going, what's everyone fucking moaning about? You know, cheer up, you miserable bastards. We won, didn't we? You know, there's a little bit of that. And Maybe we all are miserable. Maybe we're not. And the thing is, as well, I mentioned to my brother last night, I said, if we do somehow shit out our way to the playoffs,
yeah,
it puts you in a, he turned around and went, well, you know, depending who finishes third, and if you finish sixth, you know, if it's Fulham, we're going to get blown away anyway, so it won't matter. But if you somehow they get up and you've got West Brom over two legs, can you see a Gary Rowett side scoring enough goals over two legs to beat a side? That's it. The getting to the playoffs shouldn't be seen as the accomplishment of the season. The season, that's when the season starts. But we've never even started the season in the Championship, or not for a,
I know what you mean.
Best part of
20 I think
years.
His choice of word for the Stoke game, which felt like something like a traditional Millwall match. You know, everyone listening to this show knows exactly what we mean when we say that. I didn't think of it as chaotic. I think, you know, it's what we've touched on here, Harry. That didn't feel chaotic. It just felt like a Millwall game, you know, where, yeah, suddenly the rules are out the window. Suddenly form doesn't matter. You're taking the game to arguably a better opponent, but that no longer matters, and because
of course you're going to leave yourself open at time to time. Every team's going to have attacks. This idea, like, it did become stretched. The game becomes stretched. It was like a
did
basketball
last night.
Game
it did last minutes. Night. They
right. had a but that's what didn't happens it? In football. People move. They go the ebb and flow. You know, they're getting driven on by the crowd. Mm. You know, this is what happens. This is what. Note to Gary: the home team are supposed to rise to that. That's what they're supposed to live on. That's the advantage of being at home. This is why, for many years, you know, in Europe, teams never won away from home because it was partisan crowd, and it was. Yeah. They lived up to it. It was hard places to go, you know.
Achtung, Mehlball.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Then it should be a hard place to go at its very core, and you're taking out the element that makes, you know, last season he talked about, this is the interesting part, remember during lockdown when he didn't win in eight years,
a long time,
he mentioned the fact that it was always going to be hard for us because we didn't have our crowd. Now, but you've come back and your football is to sort of navigate the crowd's wants and desires, who are going to help you achieve your, you know, they should be one. We should both want the same thing. We should, like, the manager, crowd, team should all be working towards the same goal. The goal is for us to win football matches, right?
Well, I agree. But, however decisively you can argue both of those two wins, Stoke and Reading last night, you know, you could talk about whether they're decisive wins or not. They were good wins from my perspective. Both have occurred where that crowd and the team almost fuse as one unit. It becomes Millwall. That's when the only time we'll ever succeed, in my opinion, in league terms, is where we have that feeling on a regular basis, because that's how we compensate for the lack of finance that brings in the international players that other teams call normal. I remember when Gary Rowett first joined us, Harry, just after Neil Harris departed, And I can't remember how he put it, but so I'm paraphrasing a bit, listeners, but he said something to the effect that he wanted the Millwall crowd to be, to make it the horrible place that he remembers as a player coming. He wanted that sense of overpowering bias for the crowd, the home crowd. It brings a pressure on everyone, and it makes, you know, good teams crumble. But I don't think he believes it. I think there's a certain fear of it, because you don't know. It's like riding the tiger. You don't know where it's going to run off to, do you? You know, and I think sometimes you can talk about loving that, but I don't know whether he does love it. I think one thing I did pick up from Neil listening to his podcast, and I'm not here to contrast the two, because they're two different men, but I think he did understand that, and I don't think he feared it. I think he knew that it was the secret weapon up our sleeve. And I think that's what's gone missing.
My question would be, is that under Harris, we were famously very, very good in cup competitions.
We were more than
some of our parts. I can never imagine us beating a Premier League side under Gary Rowett. Even if we were in the Premier League, I think we would do. Norwich are setting a record this season, would be my.
Yeah, I mean, the high points of Leicester in the cup and Everton in the cup, Harry. Both big nights, you know, days.
If we ever went up under a Gary Rowett managerial reign, I can imagine a record low points total from Millwall, where the idea to go up and to become even more Millwall, to double down on the we need to fucking get 15-18 points at home this season to have any chance, you know what I mean, like this would be the bare minimum. And I couldn't imagine Gary Rowett doing that. So I'm not saying that. The problem is you're biased by the fact that you only watch Millwall on a regular basis. So
I don't know.
I don't sit here and listen to the Luton Town podcast, or God forbid, a fucking Birmingham City podcast, because I'm pretty sure that a lot of these, Bristol City are another one, there are bigger clubs than us who are having worse seasons.
Look at Cardiff.
And they seem to be going, they seem to be going through managers like, you know, like a hot knife through butter, and they're not really getting anywhere. But for us, we seem to have somehow found ourselves in a position where, I don't know, we want, I think it's coming from a good place, these people that want. I don't necessarily think everyone really means they want Rowett gone. I think what they want, they don't want Gary Rowett gone. They just want this version of Gary Rowett gone. They want the original Gary Rowett, the new shiny, tactically and astute manager.
They want the Gary Rowett that, in fairness to him, because this is not a knock fest. I don't want it to be a knock fest for Gary Rowett. But he did make changes last night, Harry. He did, however you want to put it, the changes were forced on him against Stoke and last night. And you then had two of the best halves of football that we've seen since pre-COVID, you know, because it was gung ho. Suddenly Millwall's alive, and that's what you go there for.
There's a great meme there somewhere with you saying Gordon's alive with Millwall's alive somewhere.
I mean, that for me is the essence of it. I mean, you can't approach every game where you're all out of tact, because that becomes predictable. So, you know, I do accept. I'm trying to be counsel for the defence of Gary Rowett. I do accept that sometimes you have to set up, particularly away from home, but maybe sometimes at the Den too, where you're not necessarily playing the game that your opponents think you're going to play. So there's always a place for, you know, keeping your hand tight. But in general, over the 23 home games, if he plays the kind of football that we... less now, so we're into the season. But if he plays the kind of football we saw in the second half, in general, you'll win a lot more than you lose at Millwall with that kind of approach.
I agree. I don't know. I'm now trying to cancel something for the defence. I don't know whether or not they're targeting a points tally by a certain game number. I don't know if they've sort of moneyballed this.
Managers do that, don't they? Yeah.
They're requiring, I need this many points by Christmas, knowing that I might then, you know, let's be honest. If Millwall are eighth outside the playoffs on goal difference, there will be more money, because Burleson will back it, because
there's a chance.
There is a chance, and they backed it under Harris in Ben Marshall. And you know, there will be funds. I'm sure there will be. Whether or not that means that the players have to leave or whatever, we're not privy to these conversations, but you know, Millwall, the Den will pick up its own, you know, if we're eighth at Christmas, Christmas will be big at the Den for the games that we're there. And then we're into January and March and April. And then, you know, you go through that January, February stage and they're still there in eighth and two, 3 points outside the playoffs and you win a couple of games. It won't matter what they're playing like on the pitch. It'll be us lot off it that will drive that.
That's right.
So maybe he's managing our expectations until he needs us as the 11th man.
He's doing a good job of that, that's for sure.
I was trying to be positive. I don't know. Like I sat there last night, and I'll be honest. I've got something on Saturday. I've got like stag do whatever, yeah. So I can't go. So I went last night and wouldn't watch it on the red button. But it was fucking cold, and it was
it was hard,
you kind of have forgotten, you know, through COVID or whatever. Not that it's outside, but you forget how fucking sort of eerie stadiums are in it. With the, it was sort of foggy last night. It come down and it was in front of the halogen bulbs of the floodlights, and it was all the old romanticism. And then someone calls someone a cunt, and you're like, yes, this is what I come here for on a Tuesday night.
But then it warmed up a lot in the second half, and you forget about the cold because that's what football does. That's the power of the game. I mean, we've got a big game on Saturday, but as you said, we've got the Panto villain in Wayne Rooney coming down to the Den.
You let your country down.
All the rest of it. I mean, if we can tap into what we had last night in second half and what we had against Stoke, let's call it the Millwall chaos, because that's the way it's gonna. We're gonna succeed if we're gonna succeed this season. I think if Gary Rowett can understand that and somehow overcome his own personal demons and start to go with it, then you know he may yet salvage the season. I think there's no reason when you look at the teams above us. If you exclude the ex Premier League sides, Harry, Bournemouth, Fulham, West Brom, Coventry, Huddersfield, Luton, Blackpool above us.
We've seen Coventry at the Den. They weren't very good. Mills switched off for 2 minutes.
We made them look better than they were. I think that's the thing.
And then what? Blackpool we beat last minute goal. And then we haven't. Luton beat us.
And so, then the pack, you know, behind us: Blackburn, Swansea, QPR. None of those are all that. You know, Stoke we've seen already. So there's no reason. I mean, all these clubs would say the same thing, but we're talking.
A lot of clubs are saying this about us. Let's be honest. In any other club's podcast going, how the fuck are we there? That's normally the question. How are we all there?
But we've got something they don't, and that's the Den. And that must become our secret weapon, if it's not so secret.
Not so secret.
And if Gary Rowett can't get that, then he's not as good a manager as everyone says he is. That's a different, whether he is a very good manager or not, is a different podcast.
Have you come to the conclusion that you want him gone? It feels very much like I felt like I sort of sat on this island by myself for quite a long time, and the island seems to have grown around me as more people have turned up on the ship sat Rowett. And now I'm sort of sitting, I'm not necessarily fully aboard. I'm sort of standing on the gangplank looking at others joining and thinking, have I got it wrong, or is everyone coming to me now? You know, I think I've changed my mind more times to be more, well, no, his style, but he's not bad enough to get sacked, which is a different thing.
Well, I think he's probably in that zone because the results will do his talking for him. It's only if the results tail off will, I think, the club actually act. Now, whether they're, you know, if it tails off early enough and we don't get involved in the relegation fight, which looking at the table, we shouldn't do because the bottom three look like they are distinctly going to be worse than everybody else above them. So even if we have a mediocre season from here onwards, we shouldn't be involved in the bottom of the table, at bottom end of the table. I don't see any reason why Millwall would sack him, because I don't think it's in the nature of not in the DNA of the club to act as ruthlessly as that. Although interesting.
We'd never do what Spurs did, would we? We wouldn't have aligned someone up on the odd chance that he's, you know, if he loses the next game, he's gone. Don't worry about it. We'll talk to you now, you know.
Well, put Spurs to one side, because they move in different circles to us. But going back to the Neil Harris podcast, what Theo did in axing two club legendary servants in McCleary and Rhino and Macca to bring in Mark McGee, which actually was decisive. It was ruthlessly done. In the what turned out to be the championship winning season in the third tier, so when we did act ruthlessly in the past, it paid off. Now, who knows? I mean, I don't see Mill doing it. So you know, to some extent, it's just speculation. To answer your question, do I want him gone? I am increasingly thinking that we have a good set of players here, Harry. We've seen it twice now, Stoke and Reading, where the players have come alive. They brought the crowd into play, and actually, we have players of some talent, actually, by our standards. And I'm just wondering whether another manager would bring out from those players that kind of Millwall attacking verve that we all want to see back. It doesn't seem to be in Gary Rowett's nature. Whether he can tap into that over the next month or two, going up to Christmas, I don't know. I hope he will. I don't expect him to, but I hope he will and find that streak. But I do wonder whether somebody else would be doing a better job. I don't know who that person is. I don't have any names. And people always say, well, who would you bring in? And, you know, I was reading the Reading manager after the game, his post-match comments where he said that Reading were fantastic. I thought, well, what deluded person are you? You know, what game were you watching? So I don't want him.
Let's put him on.
We don't want him.
I don't want him then. I definitely don't want that. I mean, for me personally, I think it's depending on what your expectations are. My expectations are that Millwall should challenge for the top six. I don't think this league is particularly great. I think when you've got a player like Jed Wallace in your team, you should be looking at one end of the table rather than the other.
Yeah.
And the keeper's class, the left back's decent, the centre midfielders are all right. Savile scored 10 goals when he was here last time when we played to his strengths and didn't play him in a position that doesn't suit him. Wallace is arguably the best player in the division on his day, you know, every other week almost. And I think that's good enough. I think I've named four or five players there that are decent. Sean Hutchinson is our unsung hero and probably my player of the year so far. That's it.
He,
you know,
played well last night. Yeah,
this is beginning to become a deep, very good championship side, a very, very good championship side. Now, is it ready to take the next step? And is this manager ready to guide us to that next step? I'd almost want someone that's done it before. That's kind of my problem with Gary Rowett.
An experienced.
Well, not necessarily experience. I just want someone with, like if what you're saying there is, like, we're looking at this idea that we moved away from Millwallness when we got rid of Harris to this next level of sort of artistic, tactical nous, whatever you want to call it. You know, I can't see it. I just see a different style of football. I don't see necessarily a more tactically astute manager at times. Yes, he's got two things right, but we could list a hell of a lot more things that he's got wrong. You know, the same comebacks of why Rowett should stay and this and he should be given more time seemingly come around that people like to batter sort of certain players that were here before he was here. But it is his job to get rid of them. That is a football manager's job, and the recruitment side is his job as well.
I think so, overall we're better. I mean, we've got more quality in the squad.
There's still some dead boys.
We know that. You can argue about some players are not featuring, but overall, with one or two exceptions, I'd say the squad has improved.
So where would be a successful season then? I think before the season you asked that, but I think we asked a lot of people, and I don't think we sort of got like top 10. But the top 10 is the same as what we finished the two seasons before. You've got to start to make progress. Otherwise,
well, we didn't. I thought we had, but last season, which is kind of a season that was erased because we didn't go and it was all kind of behind closed doors, but we finished 11th last year. But I mean, you know, one or two spaces doesn't make much difference. I mean, unless we're finishing in the top six, in my opinion, then it's a mediocre season. Now you can, you know, I can talk till the cows come home about Mill's history and how brilliant a season that is, but it don't mean jack shit. It's the way the game is now. Unless you're involved at the top table, then you're largely speaking, you know, treading water. And I think that's you know, I to some level I don't. You know, Mill's always been treading water, so that's why, you know, we go. But I just want to see some entertainment on those fortnightly trips across the water. But to answer your question directly, I think unless we're finishing in the playoff positions this season, then that's not what we were told when he first arrived. His aim was to get us into those top six positions, or the playoff positions. We wouldn't finish in the top two, I don't think. So unless anything short of that has to be deemed as
failure.
Not delivering what was on the Amazon.
I'd like to make this very clear. I don't think anyone's expecting us to get promoted.
No, that's a
different
level.
Through the playoffs. No. I think they just want to get there. Everyone wants their night. Everyone wants that Millwall night, you know, and you know exactly what I mean. Anyone who's listening, you know what I mean.
Well, you want the drama of the last day. I mean, whether you succeed or fail to get into the top six, if it's a last day, I don't know, where they're doing the Sky Sports and your one goal settles it one way or the other last minute and all that kind of thing, then you have had your drama. I think
we'd get done on the golden goal though, wouldn't we? That would be the wolf last minute, last kick.
We'll talk about the Bristol Rovers game a few years ago where we won it with a similar kind of dramatic last day, yeah. and they got into the playoffs. I diverted my mind off on the South End and their plight now, but anyway, we'll probably call it quits there, H. I mean, I don't think that Millwall will be as ruthless as maybe I would have liked. Top clubs are ruthless, and then other clubs are also ruthless and they fail. So, you know, you're
chuck three,
the coin.
I mean, the thing is, I'll chuck three names at you, and they're the reasons that people will say no is why would they want to come here? Two, money, and three, you know, are they coming here for the right reasons? So, my three would be Alex Neil, Chris Wilder, and Eddie Howe. Now, if you're going to get any one of those three, you expect success with those three names. That's it.
Yeah.
Alex Neil will have a point to prove whether or not it'll work.
He might be the only one that's affordable for us. I don't know.
Possibly. I would have thought, ridiculously, throughout the other day, and someone said I actually could see that working, is I could see if Sam Allardyce is ever going to take another job in football, I think after getting relegated last season, I think that's his Premier League job's done. I think he needs. So if he ever wants to work again, it's going to be a Championship promotion. And maybe he will. Maybe he will want to come to a club like... I could actually see Sam Allardyce and Millwall going together like a pint of wine in Sam Allardyce's hand.
Ex-player. I've seen him play in a Millwall shirt in my time.
I'd like Allardyce at Millwall. I think our back four's sorted for him already. I don't think he'd have to do much on that.
No. I mean, I don't want to leave the show on a downbeat level because we are just goal difference out of the top six. So that would be a fantastic season if we finish in those playoff positions. And I don't have any particular grudge against Gary Rowe. I just don't know. Sometimes I can't put any logic to some of the stuff that we see. But if he keeps getting results like we did last night and previously against Stoke, then great stuff. You know,
Funny that, like, I agree if he does the great stuff, but is it because you just can't warm to him? I can't warm to him. I don't think
there's any. I mean, I'm going to exclude Neil Harris because I think he occupies a particular role in Millwall life, and there will never be another player of such stature and manager who actually achieved a lot with very limited resources. So, to some extent, it's an unfair comparison. You're talking about somebody that is almost in the lifeblood of the club and remains so. And listening to him speak, I think probably will always remain so in everyone's eyes that saw him, that was there when he managed. So that's a hard comparison. I'm just trying to think of other managers. I mean, Holloway, when he came to us, was initially thought of as quite a coup when he first arrived, and that went quite sour, but not, you know, it didn't go sour as quickly as people like to imagine now when it's...
I mean, he kept us up the first season.
I don't want to rehash the Holloway season, but, you know, a lot of people, and I include myself, listeners, I'm not without sin, you know, he was thought of as being somebody that's going to take us places, and that's why he was hired. There was never any love of him, but he did at least deliver some initial measure of success. Then it all went square, and that was that. I'm going to put Lomas to one side because he
was dead before he was
dead man walking, wasn't he? As he walked
before
through the
door. Before he'd even played for him. Yeah.
And then you're going back to, I don't know, Kenny Jackie had no links to us, but I think he remains very respected, and he seemed to have a measure of understanding of the club. And I think it's probably that. I think that's the only thing that bothers me with Gary Rowett is I'm not sure that he understands the requirements of a Millwall crowd, which is in some ways quite a simple thing because, you know, they have quite simple demands, really, which is maximum effort and some measure of commitment. I think Kenny did and understood that and knew how to work with that. And I'm not sure, in all honesty, that Gary Rowett has ever really demonstrated to me that he does. Now, a lot of his time has been played before empty stadiums, H. So, you know, this is a big testing season for him as well because he's finally got what he says he's always wanted and maybe... Like King Midas, King Midas himself, he wished to touch everything with gold and it becomes accursed, doesn't it? Maybe it's going down that road. I don't know. We'll see. All of that speculation. Let's hope for a good win on Saturday.
Let's hope so. Let's hope that next week we're in the top six.
Just going to say that. Beautiful stuff. Many thanks, Harry Warren. Thanks for joining me after your busy day so far. And, enjoy your day Saturday, mate. I'm going to go down the Den and we'll do another show after this little extra show on the weekend, on Sunday. Till then, arrivederci Millwall. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you for listening to Achtung Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
1, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.